Juju Watkins is out for the remainder of the tournament. What does that mean for USC? Plus, is John Calipari wearing glass slippers? And the rest of our hot takes from the tournament so far on today's edition of the College Basketball Power Hour. Welcome in to the College Basketball Power Hour. She is Ice Young. That is Jason Fitz. I am Caroline Fenton. Guys, happy Sweet 16. How we doing?
You know what we are? This is the perfect way to start the show because I think all of us have spent so much time for the last several days talking tournament. We're all just sort of sitting here trying to figure out what's up, what's down, what's left, what's right. Like, I got outside of my house and saw sunlight yesterday for a minute, and I was like, what is this?
I know it is
wild. And I just, if you haven't seen all of our coverage on Yahoo Sports, you should. But between the three of us, we've been doing so many reaction videos. I have to give a quick MVP to Ice because it's hard enough. Like, all I kept thinking about while I'm trying to track all of these men's games and figure out what's going on, and on the side TV over here, I'm like, what did I miss in the women's? What did I miss in the women's? Watching Ice break both down so quickly, absolutely insane work. MVP of the show, MVP of the network, Aisha.
Thank you, teammate. I appreciate that. It's been great. I would be lying if I said I woke up today super happy because on the women's side, seriously, on the women's side, we have to watch the rest of the tournament without one of the biggest stars in the game. And for me, like, just as a hooper in March Madness, best time of the year, it is tough when you see players take injuries this time of year. And so everything has been great. All the coverage has been fun, but it's no fun to have to start the show talking about Juju Watkins not playing anymore this season. I have to say that.
I think the timing of the injury, too, is key, Ice, because now we're not just talking about this tournament. We're talking about this tournament and whatever rehab looks like and how long is it going to take to be back to the best of who she can be. And, you know, I think it speaks to the strength that we talked about, the amount of talent that is now in the women's game, that you can lose Juju. And it doesn't mean that suddenly it feels like the bottom has fallen out on the tournament in general. But it is it's just a heart-wrenching moment here when you see, for a team that I think had national championship aspirations, that without her, that's a much tougher road. For a player that is going to look at that ring if they do win a national championship and every time think, man, I wasn't on the floor for the most important parts. Like, it's a lose-lose situation for everybody.
Yeah, in case you missed it, on Monday night, USC was playing Mississippi State. Early in that game, Juju Watkins, USC's star, one of the biggest stars in the sport, I would say one of the biggest stars in sports period right now. Juju Watkins had the ball, was driving, she was kind of sandwiched between two defenders, landed awkwardly on that right leg. She fell to the ground, instantly was grabbing that knee, was writhing in pain. It was truly difficult to watch, like the kind of injury that you see and it just sends shivers down your spine and you instantly think like, please, please, please don't let it be what it looks like. But late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, we did get a confirmation from Sham Strania of ESPN. It was a torn ACL for Juju. So that obviously affects this tournament. It doesn't just affect USC, frankly, Ice, in my opinion. This affects the entire tournament. This affects the way that I look at that side of the bracket. This affects the way that I look at, okay, you know, what does the Elite Eight shape up to look like? Because I know when Selection Sunday came around, when we looked at that bracket, we were all circling the Elite Eight in Spokane on that side of the bracket to say, we would love a Juju Watkins, Paige Beckers rematch. We want a USC UConn rematch. Now, all of a sudden, UConn's path to the Final Four feels a little bit different. That entire side of the bracket feels a little bit different. USC will play Kansas State in the Sweet 16. Now, all of a sudden, is a Juju Watkins-less USC team much more vulnerable against Kansas State. So it doesn't just change the way that I view USC's trajectory, still very much so a talented and deep team that can make a run, but to Fitz's point, just feels a little bit different now. And the odds feel a little bit different. But I look at the entire tournament differently without Juju Watkins.
You have to. I mean, how can you not? You know, this is one of the best scorers in the game right now. USC literally has been a top five, definitely top 10 team all season. When they beat the number one seed in UCLA, it was because Juju dropped 30 or Juju dropped 28. I tell you what, though, you know, seeing Juju go down in the first 5 minutes of the game, I think it was 4 minutes and 40 seconds left in the first quarter, and still having USC pull out a win versus number nine Mississippi State 96-59. I mean, they looked, you know, like they made a seamless transition without her, which is the resilience that you want to see in March. I think for USC, you've got to lean on the experience that you do have. Talia Van Alhoffen is a point guard that has experience and that's played in the tournament. You lean on Kiki Iriuffin. That's an experienced player who dropped 30 plus points in that game once Juju got out the game. I just feel like for them, it's a tall task without Juju because we haven't seen this team without her off season. But doesn't it make for such an interesting Cinderella kind of story if they do happen to win two games? And I definitely think their game versus Kansas State, they can compete without Juju on the floor.
Yeah, it's tougher when you get to the best of the best. And this is not a statement about USC. This is a statement about the rest of the top five, six programs in the country, right? Like, we can't sit here all year and tell you guys that, you know, there are multiple teams that could genuinely win a championship that are equally dominant across the women's college basketball landscape right now, and then not, you know, give it this its proper weight in those matchups, because it's not about USC versus anybody in my mind other than those teams we've spent all year talking about. So the question now becomes, can USC beat Connecticut without Juju? Like, those are the moments that, and it's kind of heartbreaking because, Caroline, you mentioned the Connecticut matchup that we were all sort of salivating for. And the first thing I think about is, like, I mean, Paige knows better than anybody what it's like to have to go through this, right? And it's just, it's just such a opportunity lost for the player. And, you know, I don't know what the NBA, I was trying to think this morning of like what the NBA equivalent of this is, but because you're not just talking about a player, you're talking about a brand. I mean, to the point, Caroline, that you made earlier, like, we've all been watching these games and these commercials, and you see Juju as much as you see anybody. Like, she's a brand. She's one of the people you think about, like, when everybody goes to Tampa for the Final Four, the faces they're going to put on the banners of the teams in the Final Four to pique interest. Juju's one of them. So it's like, it hurts from the basketball standpoint. It hurts from the marketing standpoint. It hurts this team when they're taking on the best of the best. I hope that they galvanize together and this becomes like the coolest story in the world, that they can manage to still win a championship without Juju. But that just feels like such a huge ask now.
You bring up a fair point in a comparison with Paige Bueckers. Paige Bueckers tore her ACL in 2022 when it felt like she was in a very similar position as Juju. Now, the game has grown in just the 3 years since Paige Bueckers tore her ACL. So Juju may be on a little bit of a larger stage, just given the growth of the sport. But still, Paige Bueckers was a household name. If you didn't know anything about women's college basketball, you knew Paige Bueckers. She was the star. She was the face of the sport. She tears her ACL. Now, all of a sudden, her career trajectory and her career timeline is completely kind of, probably her perception of how her career was going to go is completely turned over. But now you see where Paige Bueckers is. She still is one of the stars of the sport. She is more than likely going to be the number one overall pick in the WNBA draft. And she is on a path, a legitimate path to winning a national championship at UConn. So if I'm Juju Watkins, and I know right now the very last thing she wants is a silver lining or to look at the glass half full, because right now she's probably just pissed off and sad. And look, it's okay to be pissed off and sad when something like that happens to you, like what happened to Juju Watkins on Monday night. But if I am going to find a silver lining for her, I'd like to do that. I'm a glass half full person. I look at Paige Bueckers and what she's been able to do, how she's been able to come back from an ACL tear, how she is now one of the most effective and efficient women's college basketball players in the history of the sport. Now I kind of look at Juju Watkins and I look at next year. Fitz, you bring up next year. I usually look at an ACL tear as about a 12-month recovery, give or take a couple of months. So we're talking about the tournament next year. Is Juju Watkins going to leave USC to go to the WNBA draft after only being able to play maybe in a handful of games in the tournament, if that? You know, all of that is kind of to be determined over her recovery and what the next 12 months look like. But now we're talking about the WNBA draft. Now we're talking about women's college basketball over the next couple of years. Do we get a couple more years of Juju Watkins? Frankly, selfishly, I hope so. I hate that it happens under these circumstances, but this is kind of a domino effect that we'll see not just over the next couple of weeks in the tournament, but over the next couple of years as Juju Watkins goes through recovery.
You know, every great player has been through adversity. Every great player has had to go through something in order to show that they are actually a great player. And so I think that's why we have so much respect for Paige Beckers. There are tons of players at the next level in the W have sustained an ACL or an Achilles injury and come back from it. I think for Juju, you just hope that she has a safe and speedy recovery. But you also just selfishly can't wait for the comeback.
100%. She's kind of got the Kobe Bryant Mamba mentality. And you heard it the night. Two nights before, when she was kind of banged up with the ankle and the wrist, she was like, nobody cares, okay? Nobody cares about my injuries. Let's go back out there, and I'm going to go and do everything that I need to do. She very much so has such a competitor mentality. So this is, you know, for lack of better terms, minor setback for a major, major comeback, or at least what we all can believe will be a major comeback for Juju Watkins. So we've got full breakdowns on the injury, what that means for USC. You can find that at sports.yahoo.com. Bummer for USC, but still going to be a blast of the rest of the tournament. Let's get into some hot takes, okay? Talking about injury sucks. Let's get spicy. Let's get crazy. Let's get weird. Ice, what is your hot take for the tournament so far? Let's start with the men's side, at least.
Yeah, I'll slide back to the men's side. I mean, my take is that Arkansas has pulled off the best upset that we may see in beating St. John's. I don't think anyone expected Rick Pitino's squad to go out so early. If you're like me, you had them penciled in into the Elite Eight. You might have had the Final Four if you were really about New York's team. And so Arkansas, a team that's a 10 seed, started the SEC 0-5, but they've got John Calipari, but they've got some young guards who weren't bothered by St. John's defense, who are battle-tested in the SEC. I think they were the most pleasant surprise for me in the tournament, with seeing a team that's a 10 seed take a 2 seed down to the wire and win a basketball game and get to the Sweet 16. I feel like now they're the most dangerous team that's there, because once you've won 2 games and you shouldn't have, you just go and take more people's lunch money.
Do you think that was the most satisfying win of John Calipari's career that was not a national championship game?
Probably.
It's got to be one of the roster.
Yeah, got to be Fitz.
Think
about what he said to the sidelines. Like, when he was talking to the reporter at the, I think it was midway through the first half, and he was like, you know what? Some pressure teams don't like to be pressured, or however he said it. Like, he was talking that, like, he was living that life before we were even halfway through the first half of that game, talking his talk. And I will go back to this. Like, one thing we all talked about, we talked about this when we did the live stream prep in the tournament. St. John's plays a particularly physical style of basketball. We knew that, which also means you got to be ready for a game that's being called tight, a game that the refs are trying to get under control. From the outset of that basketball game, I thought the refs made it clear, and I thought they did a very good job, by the way. I thought they were consistent. All I ask an officiating crew to be is consistent throughout the course of the game. They were consistent in that game. Thought they did a really nice job, but they were consistent in calling it tight. And the minute we watched this, I thought, man, this is the worst nightmare for St. John's, because they live with this bully ball mentality of I'm going to force contact, I'm going to create contact, and I'm going to get something out of it. Well, once that game was being called that tight, what did we see in the second half? Everybody was fouling out. They were giving out fouls like Oprah gives out cars. And all of a sudden, there was no zig to the zag. And I am a little surprised to see one of the best coaches of all time be forced into a one-dimensional mindset. I think that happened to St. John's in this basketball game. They were out-coached. They were out-physical. They were out-played throughout the course of that. Arkansas earned that win. My bracket is now toilet paper because of it. But I think there has to be some level of Arkansas went out and they looked at the film and they said, we'll just out St. John's, St. John's. That was impressive to me.
And I think we kind of saw on full display maybe a little sense of Darwinism, a little bit of sense of strong beat stronger of, you know, no, excuse me, stronger beat strong. And bigger beats big. And sometimes at the end of the day, especially at this point in the tournament, when you're exhausted, sometimes when you are just bigger, faster, stronger, that's really what all is all you need to prevail. That was on full display for me, Arkansas against St. John's, that Arkansas was just bigger. Arkansas was just more physical. And sometimes that's just the nature of the conferences that you play in, of the resources that are at your disposal. And that at the end of the day, like an SEC team that's got, you know, several 6'7" plus guys is just going to beat a team that doesn't have as much height, that doesn't have as much size, and doesn't have as much physicality. But, you know, when I watched that game, yeah.
I would say, or a team that doesn't play their player of the year in the Big East for the last 5 minutes of the game. Because we would be remiss if we didn't mention that on this podcast.
What could you do? Like, why? Ice, make it make sense.
This is the only way it made sense to me. And I sat on CBS Sports Network all week. I've been on a panel with coaches all week talking this out. So maybe I have my coaching philosophy on me. The only thing that made sense was that RJ Lewis Jr. was pouting and had an attitude that didn't look like he was going to win the basketball game and get his team to a Sweet 16. Forget that he shot 3 of 17, because we've seen great players have a tough game in the tournament and still be put in the game at the end of the game to be great and to figure it out. He didn't receive that opportunity. Rick Pitino subbed him out with 5 minutes left in the game, did not put him back in the game. And so I felt like, you know, Coach Pitino is an old school coach. He's going to win his way. In that moment, that did not include RJ Lewis Jr. on the floor. And that is just tough to swallow in March, obviously knowing that they lost the game. But two, like, as a player, seeing our player of the year not in the game late game, knowing that in any other game situation we've needed this season, he has been the guy to go to, is tough to weather that kind of storm in March. So I don't have any of the answer other than Rick Pitino is old school, and that's what he decided to do.
Look, Rick Pitino is one of the greatest college basketball coaches maybe ever, but for sure right now. Rick Pitino knows more basketball in his pinky than I will ever know in my entire lifetime. But he's the one that's going to have to sleep at night knowing that they are no longer playing basketball because his best player, that league's best player, was watching from the bench. And frankly, that's a tough one for me. I can sleep at night knowing that I did everything that I could possibly do. I exhausted all of my resources to win a game, and we still weren't good enough. But to live with that, and also, I don't know if you guys caught his post-game press conference, but at the conclusion of that game, I was like, I have to tune in to see what his explanation for this is. And he didn't have one. It was more so turning it back around on the reporter that was asking the question to say, you're baiting me. You're baiting me in this question. When I think coaches have fabulous opportunities to communicate through the media, whether they're talking to the locker room, boosters, athletic directors, fans, whatever it might be, that's also a coach's opportunity to get ahead of or shut down a narrative. Rick Pitino had an opportunity to set the narrative straight of exactly why he made that decision, and he didn't. And I think that that's a misstep from Rick Pitino, Fitz.
Yeah, I mean, if his goal was to teach a lesson to one player, how many players did he hurt in the process of executing that goal? And that's just where you mentioned he's one of the greatest of all time. My question is, like, what would Coach K have done, right? Like, in those situations, what would Izzo do in that situation? What would, you know, what would Jay Wright have done through those situations? Just go back and just ask yourself. Like, and I think the most important part of coaching at times, in my opinion, from the outside looking in, is swallowing your pride and doing what's best for the whole, no matter what. And coaches always tell players to understand that it's about the team. And you just, how many times do we see Wally Szczerbiak over the course of the weekend say, the most impressive thing is that they've all bought in to the team. Sometimes I look at some coaches in college basketball and I feel like they preach that with their words, but their actions don't necessarily speak to that same thing. So it's a tough look for a legendary coach.
And look, maybe it wouldn't have made a difference if he was out there on the floor, but maybe it would have. And the fact that we even have space to wonder, yeah, we'd like to know. Like, the fact that there's any room for speculation, that's kind of the really frustrating thing. One of my hot takes, maybe it's not even a hot take, but this has become, I think, the number one topic of conversation, at least coming out of the men's side of the tournament. Now that in the first round, all top 16 seeds, so all 16 four seeds won, and that we only have power four teams now in the Sweet 16 for the first time ever. This is the fewest conferences that will be represented in the Sweet 16 in the history of the NCAA tournament, with four. The previous record was seven. So yes, pretty wild history being made here in terms of, you know, the big get bigger and the best are at the top. But the topic of conversation has been such an overreaction, I think, and that is Cinderellas are dead. Yeah, make a funeral for the Cinderellas. We're never going to get a St. Peter's again. We're never getting a Loyola Chicago again. NIL has ruined Cinderellas. No, it hasn't. Cinderellas aren't dead. What a wild overreaction that we are getting to the first few days of the NCAA tournament. It might feel like it, since we only have the biggest powers that be represented in the Sweet 16. It might feel like it because the first couple of days of the tournament weren't riddled with 16s beating 1s and 15s beating 2s and 14s beating 3s and so on and so forth. But I can't say definitively that Cinderellas are dead. And the reason that people are saying Cinderellas are dead is because the transfer portal in NIL has killed it. That has killed Cinderellas. And I apologize if anybody is listening to this podcast in the car with their children. I promise. The Disney princess is still alive and well. But I look at last year. Last year, NIL existed. The current transfer portal rules existed. We had Yale, a 13 seed, beat Auburn. We had Duquesne, an 11 seed, beat BYU. We had GCU, a 12 seed, beat St. Mary's. We had NC State, which is the Cinderella of the tournament, making it all the way to the Final Four. But even still, it's not like NC State is some sort of South Harmon Institute of Technology with zero history of basketball excellence. NC State has two national championships. That was our Cinderella. So I think it's a gross overreaction to say that NIL has killed Cinderellas, because we've seen this before. In 2016, 2018, and 2019, the only mid-major that was represented in the Sweet 16 was Gonzaga. And Gonzaga was a one seed. It's not like Gonzaga was some sort of rinky-dink that was upsetting everyone in order to get there. In 2015, we had the exact same thing, where all top 16 teams won in the first round of the tournament. So this isn't something new. It's rare. It's rare, and it's easy to point to the changes and the new rules in the sport to say NIL did it. But it happened in 2015. We had crazy upsets in 2024. In 2022, we saw St. Peter's, a team that had never won a tournament game in the history of the program, get to the Elite Eight. That was the NIL era. So it's easy to jump to conclusions. It's easy to want to be dramatic about it. I think Cinderellas are still alive and well. We just don't have one this year.
Here's the thing about NIL. It's drastically changing. So you could say that St. Peter's a couple of years ago was in the NIL era, but it wasn't compared to what it was then. Guys that time were making 300K a season. Now they're making 1.5. And still, it's okay if they don't win. I.e. Baylor. Throwing shots here if I can. Spent all the money in the world on NIL. Still went 9-9 in the Big 12. Still got a 9 seed in the tournament. I think what we're seeing, maybe at least on the men's side, is that the difference in the gap in the number one seeds compared to everyone else. There's just a difference when you're playing a team like Florida, who had a tough game versus UConn. You give the back-to-back champs a lot of credit for how they competed, but eventually you saw the difference in the size, in the athleticism, in pulling games out. I feel like the Cinderellas are the 6 seeds of Ole Miss, the 10 seeds of Arkansas. But what do those two have in common? They've been in the toughest conference all season. I'm not at all surprised that if there were going to be Cinderellas, it's going to be teams coming from the SEC. They've been playing against the best teams all country. They're not scared by an Arizona, by a Purdue, by a Clemson. They don't care, because we've been seeing Florida and Auburn and Tennessee game in and game out for the last couple of weeks. They don't care.
But we had McNeese beating Clemson. We still had Drake beat Missouri. Like, sure, it's not the same St. Peter's going to the Elite Eight that we had a couple of years ago, but I think that's more the exception and not the rule.
Also, like, this conversation about everything that's broken, you know, and you mentioned the NIL and the transfer portal. I feel like we spent the last 24 hours yelling about all this. And I will just remind everybody that we just went through a weekend where a coach coaching in the tournament was coaching while we all knew he was taking a different job. So, like, and for everybody that's sitting here saying, well, you've got kids right now that are in the transfer portal that are supposed to be getting ready for their Sweet 16 game. Okay, last weekend we had a coach that had already accepted another job and the world knew about it. So politely, respectfully, sit down, shut up, and color in your books if the answer is like, we shouldn't let the players do this. We let the coaches do it all the time. Ow. While I'm on my soapbox, I'm going to twist your take and I'm going to give... I'm just going to be honest, okay? I was raised in a blunt family. That's just the way my mom just always told it like it was. That's how it is. So I'm just going to be honest brutally for a second. We're talking about basketball Cinderellas. Want to make sure, you know, we're not talking about the princess here. I want Cinderellas to die. I'm good with Cinderellas being dead. And the fact is...
Oh, you're no fun.
People are good with it too. This is the part of it that everybody misses, all right? Remember years ago... Duke took on Butler in the national championship game, and it was a Butler team that had this monumental Cinderella run. They took Duke all the way down to the wire. It was an incredible championship game. Duke won at the buzzer. I watched every second of it, and I was like, oh my God, a Cinderella almost won the championship. Why do I bring that game up? Because it's one of the lowest rated championship games in history. In fact, if you look at the ratings history of the NCAA tournament, and I know people get bored by TV numbers, but the TV numbers speak to what people are paying attention to. If you look at the TV numbers, after the first weekend, Cinderella games get lower and lower and lower ratings every single time. So we say we love Cinderellas in the first weekend, but once we get to the Sweet 16, we really want the biggest brands. Like this tournament, and for all the yelling and screaming, the opening day of this tournament had the highest average rankings we've ever seen for the opening day of the tournament. Like nobody was crying about it. And we're about to get the biggest brands in college basketball taking on each other in the best games. That's what we really want. Like we say we want Cinderellas. We don't want to watch Duke take on Nashville Auto Diesel College in the Sweet 16. We don't. And then we don't want to watch him get beat by 40. What we really want to see is Duke versus North Carolina every time we can. We like brands. So the fact that we've got a Sweet 16 that is full of the biggest brands in college basketball. In fact, all of the biggest ratings catchers this year in college basketball are still alive in the Sweet 16. The numbers are going to be through the roof on this thing because we say, it's kind of like people that say they listen to NPR. Cool. You say you listen to public radio. You don't listen to public radio. People that are like, oh, I'm reading a book. No, you're not. You haven't read a book in 3 years. Stop acting like you're cool. That's where I am with this whole Cinderella conversation. We want Cinderellas. No, you don't. The numbers show that over the course of the tournament, you stop paying attention to the Cinderella. So what you really want is a cool, fun story. And if you can't find a cool, fun story out of the biggest brands in college basketball, shame on you.
I read it in an article. No, you didn't. You watched a TikTok. Okay. Let's just tell the truth here.
Yes. But
I think that's an important distinction is in my eyes, I think that Cinderellas have an expiration date. I think everyone loves Cinderella stories in the first round of the tournament. Everyone loves when Oakland beats Kentucky or St. Peter's beats Kentucky or when Yale beats Kentucky. That's fun. That's craziness. I go back to college football season. Vanderbilt, who is the rinkiest, dinkiest program in the SEC, beats Alabama. The big bad powers that be, the untouchable, unbeatable, omnipotent Alabama. And everyone, for at least a brief period of time, fell in love with Vanderbilt because it was David beating Goliath. It was the true underdog story that I think we all fall in love with. But I didn't need to see Vanderbilt in the college football playoff. Like I didn't need to see Indiana and SMU in the college football playoff. I wanted to see Oregon and Ohio State. I wanted to see Notre Dame and Georgia. I want to see the big boys competing on the biggest stage. So I think that can also be applied to the NCAA tournament. It's fun to see David beat Goliath in the first round. I don't need to see Oakland and Jack, whatever his name was, you know, in the Elite Eight. Like, I need to see Duke and North Carolina. Like, I need to see Auburn and Florida and Michigan State and Kentucky in the biggest stage but I like the upset stories because it leaves a space for what I think makes March so great, and that is anyone can win. And anything can happen, you know, and the characters that we fall in love with.
Everybody says that, but let's include it. Lipscomb wasn't going to win the championship, right? Like, they can't win. So, like,
they don't need them to win the championship. They can win a game. That's all that matters.
Yeah,
you think Nice fans aren't going to talk about beating Clemson for the rest of time?
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Both of you guys are blowing smoke if you say that upsets don't carry March Madness. You're nuts. That's literally why we're here. We're here because we expect Duke to be a one seed and one through everybody. And when they lose to a five seed, we're like, let's go. Because it's about matchups. Because it's about the game. Because just because you are the best team or just because you have the best player doesn't mean you're going to win the game. I'm actually looking forward to upsets. That's my favorite part of the whole thing. Is you thought you were going to dance in here and win. And instead, somebody like McNeese is like, I'm going to send you home early. Call me later. We're going to keep dancing. That's what makes the tournament so amazing. Like that, it's not the powerhouse that always wins.
That look, I don't disagree with that. That's an amazing part of it. But the history shows if we ended up with a Final Four matchup that was McNeese versus Lipscomb, and then on the other side of the Final Four matchup, it was Duke versus Maryland, more people are watching Duke versus Maryland. Like this, it's not the Cinderellas, I think, that have been the problem with the opening rounds of the tournament. I think it's the fact that we had one great ending. Like the Maryland, look, I'm not going to love that ending more if it came from McNeese than if it came from Maryland. Like there's a great story and a great ending. We just haven't had, if you really want one shining moment, we've had what, maybe two, like the Florida shot late in the game against UConn and then a Maryland buzzer beater. Like the rest of this has not been that dramatic. Like I think it's the drama that we're missing, and upsets are an easy way to manufacture drama. But throughout the course of it, everybody says they want it, but they stop watching it.
That's when I tell you, go watch the women's tournament, because we've had several overtime games. Maryland had to beat Alabama in a double overtime game against the Sweet 16. It was the longest game that I feel like I watched up to date. You're right, though. I hear you on the number one seeds and the best players. I just also think a little sprinkle of upsets is what makes March the best thing ever invented. March Madness, that is.
Yeah, the upsets in the first round. Because I will say, 2022, the St. Peter story got old. I was like, okay, this is cute, but like, let's move on.
I can't agree with that. Caroline, I can't agree with that. For once, I can't agree with something that you said. That story did not get old. It was the best freaking thing in the world to see that team continue to run through one seeds and four seeds. Cracking up, though.
It was awesome. But then I was like, okay, all right. Okay, good teams now. Let's go to the matchups of the big boys now. But I would say that this, when we talk about March Madness, who do we talk about? We talk about the Amir Khans, and we talk about the DJ Burns. We talk about the Sister Jeans. We talk about the underdog stories that we've absolutely fallen in love with. But Ice brought up the women's game. I have a hot women's take, and call me crazy. UCLA ain't it. Sorry. UCLA, the number one overall seed, hasn't really impressed me. Now, if you haven't watched the women's games and you're listening to me and you're going back and you're looking at the final scores of UCLA's games, you're like, okay, you know, what are you smoking, Caroline? Because UCLA is absolutely, you know, blown past both of their opponents. But it hasn't been blowouts throughout the process. UCLA was tied with Richmond at the half. UCLA got out-rebounded at the half against Richmond. It was probably way too close for comfort for UCLA fans when they were only up 12 at halftime against Southern in the first round of the tournament, where all the other ones and two seeds were up 50 at halftime. And I thought, okay, do we have a run rule here like there is in college baseball? Because this is getting almost like mean and cruel and rude, because there is no way that some of these 16s and 15s and 14s are going to be able to scratch and claw their way back in the second half. So I feel like there are legitimate concerns there with UCLA Ice, that they just, that yes, they pull away in the second half, and yes, you can make those halftime adjustments, but the slow starts are fine when you're playing, you know, teams that you are just overall better than, bigger than, more physical than. But there's going to come a day where UCLA can't really afford a late start. And I know we said it on Selection Sunday that I think we both picked UCLA to be the first one out. But I see some vulnerabilities there with UCLA. And if I'm a Bruins fan, I can't feel comfortable even with the 30-plus point victories.
Yep, I'm not surprised at all that you said that. I feel the exact same way, felt like that, probably going into the tournament, that them getting the number one overall seed made them vulnerable because they weren't playing like the number one overall seed to get that. I feel like for UCLA, they rely so much on Lauren Betts inside that their guard play sometimes isn't a focal point, and it needs to be in the tournament. In terms of tough games to get to the Sweet 16. I mean, South Carolina only beat Indiana 63-54. UCLA had a 20-point win, and like you said, they pulled out in the second half, but South Carolina also had a tougher game. That's an Indiana squad they had to play last year in the Sweet 16. Like, they just keep running into this team in the tournament. I will say I felt like number one seeds have looked strong, but maybe the number three seeds have been more impressive. The way LSU won their game and Caleb Williams drops 29, Flaugier's in double figures, like, that looks like a dangerous three seed to me. And then, you know, the Notre Dame Irish.
They look dangerous.
To win it all. Dangerous. It's like they woke up.
I mean, whatever happened at the end, our question when the bracket came out was, would the seeding be a sort of kick in the ass to the Notre Dame women's basketball team? I felt like through the course of the first couple of games, the answer to that was yes, because there's a little part of UCLA at times, it just felt like they lacked the intensity we expect. Like, we're used to the one seed coming in and be like, all right, I'm gonna basically curb stomp you from the outset so that you know that you've got nothing. UCLA kind of came in with the, we're fine, we got this, oh wait, we got to turn it on sort of mentality. They got away with that. I think what they're going to figure out quickly, though, is that some of these three seeds that feel disrespected are coming in from the outset with a different level of intensity from tip, and that's hard to match. I don't think you could just suddenly throttle that up, so they need to kick it in gear.
Fitz, do you have a women's hot take?
Yeah, I'm going to stick on that for a second because some of the results in the beginning of this tournament particularly are still bad for the sport. Like, when you have a team putting up 23 points, you know, or late mid-20s points, that's not good. You know, like a 60-point win in the first round, not good. And I want to be really fair and balanced here because we've talked so much on this show about how much talent there is for the top, 8 to 10 programs and how we're seeing this renaissance of, I think, more and more competition. We were also reminded in the beginning rounds of this tournament that there is still a tremendous difference between the haves and the have-nots on the women's side. And that, over time, needs to regulate itself. It's just, I don't like giving food to the lowest common denominator. And for anyone that doesn't really love the sport and they see, you know, a 60-point win in the first round, it's just like, yep, it's boring. It's not. You guys have covered that and we've talked about it. And the matchups get better and better every round. I think we're about to get to the spot where every one of these games is down to the wire and I don't know. And that's a beautiful thing. It just sets everybody back in the first round when you have a 60-point win. You know, and multiple 60, 50-point wins in the first round just feels like it's hard to stomach.
That's so funny. Because I think opposite. I'm like, six different teams scored triple digits in the first round. Let's go. Somebody is on it. Let's go. Six different teams get to 100-plus points. Like, that means number one seeds, two seeds, and three seeds aren't coming to play. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
But if I send Southern SIU Edwardsville home and I beat them by 60 and I'm Duke or I'm South Carolina, you do what you were supposed to do. I think 60-point blowouts in the second round isn't good for the sport. When you start getting to 1-8 games, it should be a bit more competitive. Or you start getting to, hey, we're playing the middle of the pack SEC team and we're a top team in the Big Ten. Then it should look a little bit better. First round, I give it to you. Like, it's just going to happen. Some teams are going to get cracked because they can't possibly compete. Second and third rounds, though, those games should be close. Those games should be a little bit more competitive. And I think on the women's side, we had some really good ones. Again, two overtime games between Alabama and Maryland. Kentucky Amazing. And Kansas State also went to overtime. Like, fantastic games. I'd be remiss if I didn't say, I'm so sad that we don't get more of Georgia Amore in this tournament, Caroline.
I know.
I thought Kentucky as a fourth seed was going to get to the Sweet 16, and Kansas State was like, oh, we got other plans. I'm sorry, but you're going to have to go home.
That's such a March thing, a March Madness thing that I just want everyone to win. And it's unfortunate at the conclusion of games like that.
I'm sorry.
I know, but I want everyone to have a try.
Y'all want everyone to win. Y'all want everybody to win, but the babies.
Exactly.
Only the big dogs. Only the big dogs can win.
I'm an elitist today. Today's show, I'm full elitist mode. I'm only interested in the best of the best. Everybody else, yeah.
But it's like, I don't know how you can watch Maryland, Alabama and not feel like, okay, both of you teams get to move on. You know, you guys both win. You guys can both move on into the bracket because it's a game like that where you think no team deserves to lose. No team deserves to go home. None of these players deserve for this to be their last game in an Alabama or a Maryland uniform. I will say, though, on that point about blowouts, I think that there can be a beauty in a blowout whenever you get to watch a star do star things. Like UConn, it was an absolute blowout yesterday, but we got to see Paige Beckers put up 34 points in the process. It was a 25-plus point win for LSU over Florida State. You want to see a matchup of those two powers be a little bit closer, but we got to see Anissa Morrow put up her 29th double-double of the season. So, even in blowouts like that, we saw Lauren Betts put up 30-plus. You know, seeing some of these stars that have been stars all season long put up insane performances, set personal records, set tournament records, set program records, you can at least find a fun story in that. But I am with you. You know, we've been doing reactions to all of the women's games that we've been watching, all of these games that I found myself get to a point of like, can we have a close game? Can we please have like closely contested games? Because there's only so many ways that I can talk about, well, this team won by 50 points. All right.
I also like in some ways, I feel like I'm at like the concert of my dreams where I cannot wait for the headliner because the headliner is going to be so great. And the opening act sucks. And that's how I felt like day one. I was just like, this is just, can we just get through this? Can we just like cycle through this to get to the actual act that I want to see? Because that's where I am with the women's tournament right now. Like I cannot stress this enough. I think that when we get to the Elite Eight, that's where it gets absolutely wild. I just want to get done with the opening act that we're never going to buy their shirts anyway and just get on to the good stuff.
We've got some good stuff in store. Absolutely. We'll look ahead to the Sweet 16. We'll also rank some of the best games that we've seen, even though they haven't been upsets, even though we haven't had, you know, the epic world-shaking 16 seed upsetting a one, we still had some great games. We'll power rank those coming up next. Okay, Power Hour, Power Rankings, nominees for the best games that we have seen so far. I know I mentioned it last segment, but Alabama-Maryland on the women's side on Monday, that was cinema. Sarah Ashley Barker, senior at Alabama, she's at the free throw line. Alabama's down three in overtime. She gets three tries at the free throw line. She hits every single one of them to take it to overtime in a 45-point game for her. That's what I'm saying when I mean, like, these teams don't deserve to lose. That was Sarah Ashley Barker's college finale in a 45-point game and a losing effort. It's just the kind of one that just hits you right in the heart. But that game was awesome. That's one of my nominees for the best game that we've seen so far this season, Ice.
Yeah, what a good game. Just watching it live, you're just yelling at the TV the entire time, like, because people keep making big shots. I'll take one from the men's side. Florida UConn. Man, it was such a good game because of the storylines going into that game. You know, just Dan Hurley, UConn, are they going to finally lose in the tournament? Are they going to pull off what we would have called a Cinderella for sure with this team having, you know, the seeding that they had? And it got you a little worried if you're watching the game because you see Florida as a number one seed, the most balanced team, I believe, right now in the country, and UConn is hanging on. In fact, they're winning the game for most of the game. And then end of the game, last few minutes, guards win in March Madness. Guards win you games. And Walter Clayton Jr. just became unconscious and was like, I'm going to knock down a couple of threes. I'm going to deal some separation. I'm going to win. It certainly gave Florida a nice, tough game in the second round. And I feel like their region is the toughest to get out of. But I thought that game and just seeing the motions from, you know, the arena, and then just finally seeing a team like UConn stopped was like, man, okay, we've witnessed like the end of something. Wow, darn. And we move on in March.
Yeah, I mean, also just seeing a player take over against Hurley. I mean, Clayton, that the end of that game was, hey, my best player is going to make a shot and yours isn't. Like, so much respect for that. You mentioned the Maryland women's game. I do want to point out, like, we should check the pulse of all Maryland sports fans at this point. Like, is College Park okay? Because, yeah. I mean, I don't know how we can have this conversation. Seriously. Like just the Maryland buzzer beater and, you know, just give me the effing ball. Like, there's just this moment.
It was a travel, also, like, to just, be fair.
That was not a travel. Just, it was not
just
a travel. Like,
just a little bit of a travel. Just a little travel. As a treat.
They broke
as
it down. They broke it down on the CBS post game flawlessly. And they went frame by frame with the gather, two steps. Not a travel. It looks like a travel. Not a travel. Actually, and by the way, also, if it had been called, we would have absolutely just murdered that ref. How can you let the game be in your hands? Like, we say we want refs to be invisible, and they were like, well, no, that's a travel. But by the way, they went frame by, like, Jay Wright went frame by frame on it. It was like, not a travel. So, you know, I think it looks like a travel because guys take massive steps and they gather. I thought it was more of a carry. It felt like he was, like, swaddling the ball like a baby. But, you know, what do I know? It doesn't matter. It went off the glass, and it was a beautiful winning shot, Ice.
Yeah, no, it was it. And look, I never want to see a game like that end with a whistle. I also don't want refs to swallow the whistle. So I understand that those things can't always coexist. It would have been just a total buzzkill if that's how that game ended. But, you know, at the end of the day, was it a travel? Was it not a travel? I think we can have that debate all day long because we've had just as many people say that it was and just as many people. And I'm not just saying, you know, us talking heads and people on the street, like powers that be, say that it is and that it isn't. It's going to be one of those probably that Colorado State fans talk about forever and ever and ever, and something that we as sports fans probably are going to forget over the next couple of years. To your point, Ice, though, about UConn, Florida, the game itself, awesome. Like, that's, I'm almost sad that we got that matchup so early in the tournament. That's the kind of matchup that I would have loved to have seen in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. But where do we rank Dan Hurley's little post-game outburst on our Power Hour power rankings? Refs effed us. Hope they don't F you, Baylor. I think, also, side note there, for all of the people that were incredibly offended by what Dan Hurley said there, is this your first interaction with Dan Hurley? Like, is this the first clip that you've seen from Dan Hurley? Because to me, that just felt like same stuff, different day from Dan Hurley.
Yeah, it did. But I will say
this. But that's the problem. That's the problem. The problem is y'all keep giving him a pass to the same stuff, different day. Just because of Dan Hurley, just because he's off the rail, doesn't mean it's okay to make statements like that. And whether you believe it or not, dude, next time, get a stop. Next time,
yeah,
when you want to guard Walter Clayton Jr. off the pick and roll, you maybe should double him so he doesn't just play one-on-one and knock down threes in a row. I feel like there were other options that could have happened in that game for UConn besides Dan Hurley leaving the game and saying the refs F them. First of all, it's March Madness. You don't get every call. You don't get every other call. We saw in the St. John's game, it's a team that played extremely physical, and that is literally where they lost the game. Because they kept fouling, because they couldn't adjust to the game. So I also feel like it's just a bit immature from a coach like Dan Hurley. Take the loss, bro. Take the loss. Go home. Go back to stores. They still love you. Get in the portal. Go rebuild and see if we're as good as you think you are. But it's the same Dan Hurley that was at Craig and showing two rings to fans and being bold in that way. And now we're surprised, but we're going to give this a pass saying the refs F you. No, bro, you also just lost the game. Take the L like everybody else in March. Take the L.
It is undeniable to me at this point that Dan Hurley is being treated differently by the media, by the people that cover him, by my friends at ESPN. He is clearly being treated differently because people behind the scenes like him. And because people behind the scenes like him, they're giving him benefit of the doubt that doesn't exist for other coaches. I think it's absolutely asinine. And I think at some point, this is Dan Hurley who sits there to his players. We all know that coaches tell their players at some point that everything you do represents the logo on your chest. So I guess I would ask Dan Hurley, do you feel like the way you act is the proper representation for University of Connecticut? Because I don't. You just got a massive amount of money to be their basketball coach for a very long time. And instead of turning around and having this incredible moment where we're talking about the tears he was shedding and the love he has for the players, we're not talking about that because yet again, Dan Hurley acted like a child walking off the court. Yet again, he didn't control his emotions. And coaches always tell their players to control their emotions. And the fact that it is now known that the athletic director from Connecticut went to the person that posted that video and said, take it down or I'll ruin your life, shows you that there is an absolute problem culturally with the Connecticut basketball program, with Connecticut sports. And I honestly think that because ESPN is 10 minutes from that campus and so many people are friends, they are not calling him out. And I believe in my heart of hearts that if it was any other coach, if it was any other coach that didn't have that, we would destroy him. And if it was a coach, to be very fair, that didn't look like Dan Hurley, he would also be treated differently. Like, this is the kid gloves we handle Dan Hurley with is unacceptable. At this point, it is fair to call him what he is, which is an egomaniac that acts like a child every time he doesn't get his way on the court. That is not a representation of how somebody should lead young men.
Just to clarify, and I agree with everything you just said, it was the SID at UConn, not the athletic director.
It was the SID.
It was the SID. I don't want to point fingers at anyone that doesn't deserve to have fingers pointed at them. If he doesn't lose his job, if he does not lose his job, and I never
that makes it worse. It would have been better if it was the AD.
He's in charge of communication. He's in charge of media. He is in charge of media training the coaches and the players and young men and women that come in and are going to be representative of the university. I never want to call for somebody to be fired because I think that is not my place. He deserves to lose his job. You do not deserve to be in a position of power if you are going to treat people that way. There is a much better way and a much more mature way that you can bring that up with a reporter, if there is even any reason to bring it up with a reporter. Because that reporter was recording a video, where recording video is totally fine per everything that I've read. All of the reporters that were there said, yeah, the tunnel is A-OK, green light. You can record players and coaches coming off of the court. It is not the reporter's responsibility to make sure that the reputation and the public image of the team is pristine. That's the team's job. That's Dan Hurley's job. Exactly. That's the player's job, to conduct themselves in a reasonable manner. That's not the reporter's job. So I thought that was a total and complete overstep. He does not deserve to have that job anymore if he's going to act like that. To the point about Dan Hurley, though, UConn knew what they were getting themselves into. UConn knew what they were signing up for. UConn understood, look, we might be signing a deal with the devil. If he wins, he wins, and we win championships, and we're okay with dealing with the actions and the overreactions and the behavior. It doesn't excuse Dan Hurley's behavior, but I don't all of a sudden feel bad for UConn that now Dan Hurley is painted in a bad light because he said something that crossed the line, because UConn knew what they were doing when they signed him to that deal.
Coaches always say you're either teaching it or allowing it. Somebody at Connecticut's either teaching it or allowing it.
Yeah, it was also just, like, unfair to say that to Baylor players as they're about to take the court in their game. You know, there's normally a nice, pretty strict rule that's like, hey, you talk to your players, I'll talk to my players. So it's also just him saying that to the team as we're about to take the court. Just too much drama, too much drama. At that point, the game is final. The season is over. You can absolutely go into the press conference and say how you feel about the referees, but to say that to another team before you're getting on the court, like Fitz said, like a child, it's just not necessary. And we expect better of coaches that have won championships. You've been there before. Act like it.
And also, not to nitpick, but this isn't like the YMCA Youth Basketball League. Like, it's not the same refs. It's not like these refs are working like five games a day. Like, it's a different crew, Dan. But awfully dramatic, as drama just seems to follow Dan Hurley everywhere. Ice, what's a game that's a nominee for you as one of the best games that we've seen so far this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I think the upsets are always fun. And we were rooting for McNeese. You know, Amir Khan, somebody that's got the aura, the boombox. Like, those kind of stories are just so fun in March. Obviously, there was some controversy there a little bit because Lil Wade had taken had verbally taken another job at a school currently coaching McNeese. And so you're like, hey, you know, how are they going to the first round with momentum? But if there was a team in the ACC that I didn't think was going to get punked in the tournament, it was going to be Clemson. Like, I would have been like, Clemson is not going to get punked. They're pretty tough. They play a good style. Like, I don't think they're going to get punked. And McNeese just straight punked them from every sense of the word. Defensively, athleticism, size, on the board, scoring. It was such a fun game to watch. And it ended up being a close game at the end. But it really wasn't. It was just a perfect example of how matchups are so important in March. You get the wrong matchup and you don't start the game how you're supposed to, you could be up and out of it. So I thought that was really fun to watch. And I just think the whole story about the manager and everything else was really cool. This is why we love March, because these stories pop out of nowhere and they only last as long as the team is good. So as quickly as we were talking to him and he was on every news cycle, as soon as they lost in the second round of Purdue, I ain't seen a graphic about him since.
I do love the manager getting $100,000 in NIL deals and transferring with coach. I mean, like, I love these. This is the world we live in now, you know, and yet nobody complained. Like, how is that kid going to manage his taxes? Like, people are happy for his NIL money. I don't, just saying, last I'll say about that.
Good for Amir Khan. And allow me to pat myself on the back a little bit here. Maybe take a little bit of a victory lap. McNeese was my pick for a Cinderella in this tournament. In a tournament that does not have very many Cinderellas, I was very proud of that one. Thank you very much. I understand that Will Wade's, in the news cycle, the way that it went, and the news that Will Wade was going to leave for NC State came out in the middle of the tournament. I thought it was a bad look. I thought, frankly, that that was going to be what divided that locker room, that there was going to be too much outside noise, that there was going to be too much confusion and uncertainty about the future, that that was going to be a distraction. Will Wade did come out and say, and said, look, I told my locker room I'm going to be here for 2 years. I've been very open and honest with them every step of the way. I told them I was interviewing for other jobs. I told them that I was probably going to be gone after this season. And that was clearly a galvanizing factor maybe for that team, that it was more so, look, this is our last run. Coach is gone. We're probably going to be gone. We're probably going to transfer. Let's do it one more time for us, for this university, for our coach, for each other. So I have to give Will Wade a whole lot of credit there. In a time where it could have been a division and nothing but a distraction, it was nothing but a let's do this for each other. So credit there where credit is due. All right, quick break here. Bold predictions as we look ahead to the Sweet 16 coming up next. All right, bold predictions as we look ahead to the Sweet 16. Fitz, I'll allow you to do the honors. What's your bold prediction?
Okay, so I picked Michigan State to go to the Final Four. My bold prediction is that they're not going to make it there. I want Michigan State to make it there because they're a deep basketball team and they're a good basketball team. But we got two straight games where they come out of the gates so slow and they come out of the gates like they've, like I talked earlier about how you have to have killer instinct. The minute Michigan State takes on a team that can shoot and they bury themselves into that 10-12 point first half hole that they've done every time, I can't figure out why they're so good. Caroline, you said earlier, don't look at the box score. Watch the game. Don't look at the box score for the last two wins for Michigan State. Go watch the first half. Those games, they were ugly. It looked like it wasn't right. And so as much as I think Michigan State genuinely has the depth and the talent to literally win the national championship, I no longer trust them to survive the slow first half starts. I wouldn't be surprised if they're out this weekend.
Jeez. I know that hurts you to say, kids, because you and That's I have been team. party for weeks
I know.
Now.
I know. Weeks. I know. But I watch these first halves and I'm like, I need a drink. I don't drink anymore. And all I keep thinking of the whole first half is like, they don't make enough tequila to calm my nerves. Like, I picked them and it's just not going well.
You're toughest on the ones that you love most.
For me, on the men's side, my bold prediction is that Arkansas will continue to win. Again, matchups, playing versus number 3 Texas Tech. for some reason, I just believe they can beat them. I'll say from a basketball standpoint, they have Boogie Fland back. And now that they've had, he missed 15 games before the tournament started. He was their leading scorer. Now that they have him back, he's been back for two games. He's a little bit more confident, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more in rhythm. That just adds another layer for Arkansas that they will need. I think Arkansas could keep dancing and mess around and get to the Elite Eight, which would be your Cinderella, Caroline, because they are a 10 seed, so we're keeping them alive.
Isn't it wild we live in a world where John Calipari's team is a Cinderella? Like,
good call. Good call. Oh, how things change. Good call.
I would give good money. I would give good money to see Calipari come out on the sidelines just wearing glass slippers for the Final Four. Like, I'm in for that. Like, solid cash.
I'm in a pumpkin.
I also think it's amazing that we have so many SEC teams getting on the men's side that we're getting a Kentucky-Tennessee matchup for the third time this season. Caroline, I know that's something that you and I chatted about. Was just like, hey, how many times do we want to see great teams go at it? Three times, four times, maybe five. Now you get Kentucky and Tennessee again. Oddly enough, Kentucky is 2-0 versus Tennessee this season. So maybe my other bold take, not really bold take, was that Tennessee will figure it out and they'll move on to the Elite Eight.
I would not be surprised if Tennessee beats Kentucky. It's so hard to beat the same team three times. But also, there's always a little lingering, you know, cloud over my head whenever we talk about Rick Barnes in the tournament. And it's like, is this the year? Like, is he going to be able to break through? I know Tennessee made the Elite Eight last year, but it just feels like every single year, Rick Barnes is the king of January and is just, you know, falls short in March. And that's so not fair of me to say that just because he hasn't done it doesn't mean that he will. But I always have a sense of distrust when it comes to Rick Barnes in the month of March. But I would not be surprised if Tennessee beats Kentucky here in the Sweet 16. I wish that we had different matchups in the Sweet 16, honestly. But, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, those are two fan bases and two teams that despise each other. So a little bit of juice there. For me, one of my bold takes, at least on the women's side, I think we only get one seed in the Final Four. And I think that one seed is South Carolina. I already talked about how I don't trust UCLA, that they've been playing it just a little bit too close for comfort in the first two rounds. Now they get an incredibly deep and scrappy Ole Miss team in the Sweet 16. That could be a close game. And then I look at USC. It's really hard for me to believe that USC can make a run without Juju Watkins. Prove me wrong, Kennedy and Kiki and Rhea. Prove me wrong. But for right now, it's hard for me to put my money on USC. And look, Texas plays a very specific brand of basketball. They want to keep the score low. They want to play defense. How sustainable is that when you're playing every other day, when you're playing some of the best teams in the country, and Texas is going to have to face Notre Dame at some point? Notre Dame is playing some of their best basketball right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if South Carolina is our only one seed in the Final Four.
I love that. That's It felt fiery till you explained it. And then it's like, no, actually, I could totally see that coming through. Look at that.
Logic.
Yeah, I totally see it. That's a great bold pick.
Thank you. Thank you. We've got a great Sweet 16 coming up, and we will have a full reaction to all of those games coming up next week. So make sure to tune in then. That's going to do it for us today. He is Jason Fitz over there. You can find him on Twitter at Jason Fitz. She is at Ice Young. She is the busiest woman in America in the month of March. You can find me at Caroline Fenton 1. Appreciate y'all for stopping by the podcast. If this is your first time, welcome in. Make sure to give us a review, subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also check us out on Yahoo Sports YouTube page. If you're a returning listener, appreciate you. Always appreciate you. Make sure that you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single second of the College Basketball Power Hour. We'll be back next week with a full reaction to the Sweet 16 and a look ahead to the Elite Eight. We're out.